Hey, what's up there, Surf Splendor podcast listeners? You know the drill. Let's get right into it. Actually, maybe you don't know the drill. Maybe you're a new listener. And for those of you who are new to the show, I am David Scales. I am the host of Surf Splendor. And we basically do alternating formats. One week we do surf news. That happens to be this week. Next week we will bring you a profile episode, and so you get two episodes of each every month. We update the show weekly, but alternating formats from week to week. Last week's episode was with John Van Hammersveld, which is a name that I feel like from talking to people, they recognize the name but don't necessarily know how they know him. And he's basically an artist. And where you know him from is the iconic Endless Summer poster, the original, the Dayglow poster with the silhouettes of the surfers with their longboards. John Van Hammersveld designed that poster and went on to have a really successful career as an artist and graphic designer, working with the likes of the Beatles, Steve Jobs, a huge client list of mainstream and surf industry people. And so I did an interview with him last week. If you didn't listen to that yet, go back, listen to it. It's in the archives. Last week's episode, I think it's episode 57. Everything is archived for free on our website, surfsplendorpodcast.com, as well as in iTunes, Stitcher, or wherever you listen to podcasts. You can find it there. So enjoy that. Next week, I'm bringing you an episode with Timmy Curran, which will be really interesting, chatting about, you know, his surf career, obviously, and then what he's been up to with his music career in the last few years. So look forward to that early next week. And I think that's it. As I always say, if you enjoy the show, share it with friends. That helps the show grow. And then, of course, follow us on social media at Surf Splendor. All right, that's it for all the business. I'll be back at the end of the show to sign us off. Enjoy today's episode of Surf News with Scott Bass. Thanks.
Yeah, God. Down the line, Surf Talk Radio, David Lee Scales. I'm Scott Bass, and we are coming to you from the Surfing Heritage and Culture Center, broadcasting from this beautiful location. We're in the library slash, what's the perfect name for this room? Conference room? But it's kind of a library and a conference
room. The boardroom.
Boardroom.
Hey, no pun intended.
No, the boardroom.
You know what I'm a fan of is the culture center more than the surfing heritage portion. I just love all the culture in here.
Yes. Believe me, we rebranded. I sit on the board here, and we rebranded the name. It used to be called the Surfing Heritage Foundation, and we rebranded it, and we spent a solid 6 months trying to figure out a different name for it.
Wow.
One that was more far-reaching, more inviting, we came up with Surfing Heritage and Culture Center, and it truly is a culture center. You bring up a great point.
I think you should put that same think tank on the Lance Medina name that you were trying to come up with.
Lance Medina, pulling leashes, causing problems.
You know, it's a good concept, just needs a little bit tighter, kind of more, I don't know, concise name.
Well, I know you have some information from the last show, some recap, but certainly you've given us a great segue into what's happening. I'll say this, that David and I, as we sit here on this Monday morning, October 20th, we're watching live the finals of the Mochi Rip Curl Pro in Portugal with Mick Fanning and Jordy Smith, and we're sitting here doing that.
Already my favorite episode that we've done together ever, just because we're actually watching an event. We've never watched an event together. We've never gone surfing together either. We need to figure that one out. But usually...
I surf alone, dude.
Do you?
Yeah, I usually don't invite people to go surfing.
That's fair. Actually, I don't either. I tend to like surfing by myself also.
And I hate it when people go, hey, let's go surfing together. Not that I wouldn't like to go surfing with you. It's not that at all. It's just like... dude, I got an hour and a half, and there's a certain tide. I'll see you out there, you know?
Right. No, I'm kind of the same way. I'm sad to admit, though, I'm kind of becoming that way in all areas of my life. It's not just with surfing. Like, I tend to like going to the movies by myself better than with somebody else because they talk too much and they want to know my opinion as soon as we exit the theater. And it's like, whoa, dude, let me absorb this for a few minutes, you know?
You are officially becoming old. I see gray in your mustache that you're growing. You're certainly salty, dude. You're closer to my age than I am to yours, I think.
I know. It's actually, like I said, it's unfortunate and it's sad. I'm not proud of it. It's just the way that it is. I like myself better than I like other people.
You're like that salty old guy that sits on the park bench and feeds the pigeons because they don't talk back to you.
Exactly. So just to bring people up to speed with, we, Scott and I both showed up in the parking lot 5 minutes before the final started, came in to Shaq, got the Wi-Fi password, streaming the event, 25 minutes left in the final. Mick Fanning has a 5.67. It was a barrel to cut back. And now looks like Jordy's making a paddle. He doesn't quite get it. Mick's going left, getting shacked. Oh my God, he might make it. Oh my gosh, that was unbelievable.
Okay, here's the deal.
That was like an 8-point ride for sure.
I got to say this. This is going to be the worst episode we've ever done.
It's going to be the best, man. No, it's not. Come on.
Because you cannot do play-by-play while we're watching. Nobody in listener land that listens to this tomorrow or the next day is going to give a crap.
They're going to love the passion.
But they're going to all watch this on Heat Analyzer or they're watching it now.
And they're going to be curious what our thoughts were when we were watching.
We can give, you know, okay. I'm concerned about the show already based on, because I've done this before and it didn't work.
All right, I'm going to try not to, but that was an epic ride. Look at this thing, dude. All right.
See what I mean? Dead air. We're seeing her watching.
Dead air.
We're watching video.
Let's bring people up to speed with what's happened in the event so far. Like you said, I have catch-up stuff from our last episode, but we'll get to that later. Since this heat's on right now, let's talk about the Rip Curl Pro.
Yes, agreed. And the big news is Lance Medina had another Lance Medina moment. Gabby.
How about that?
Gabby, a round three failure, quite frankly, and in an odd way, and certainly left everyone scratching their heads. And it was great drama, actually, when it unfolded. Luckily, I watched it live, and it was very interesting what was going down. You could tell that the webcasters, I believe it was Ross Williams, they didn't really know what to make of what was happening. Maybe break it down a little bit.
Okay, so round three heat. Gabriel needs... if Gabriel, I think, would have made... Basically, Gabriel just needed to make it through some heats, and he would have eliminated other people's chance of winning the world title. He could have clinched the world title in Portugal, but he lost in round three to Brett Simpson.
Well, let me stop you there, because he could have clinched it in Portugal, and everybody's... seemed to think that he was going to. He brought this massive entourage. Yeah. The entire Brazilian media entourage. It was an influx. It was like it was an overload of let's celebrate Gabe's world title. And so it almost jinxed it in a way. Yeah. There was just so much Brazilian hype and excitement. Maybe hype's not the right word. Excitement for Gabby winning the world title. And so Brazil as a nation is very passionate about professional surfing. Gabby's a big deal over there.
Oh, yeah.
And much like Australia, very similar to Australia in the way they treat pro surfing. It's a big sport. It's one of the main national sports.
Right. And they speak Portuguese in Brazil. And so now they're in Portugal doing this event. And
the beach was packed.
And Sipo, Brett Simpson, I mean, he's only made it out of round two in one event this year, and that was Tahiti, I think. I think that was the only event he made it out of round two. So he's had a horrible year, and he was in round three against the number one surfer. So the number one surfer, Gabe Medina, versus the number 32 surfer, Brett Simpson. Brett opened up the heat with like a 7.33, I think, and then... wasn't able to find a backup until the very end. And Gabriel was kind of getting fives and sixes throughout. And at the very end, Brett got a backup score of a five something for a couple of backhand turns. Gabriel heard the score, got a left, needed a five, I think 7.7 or so.
Yeah.
And then got kind of a chandeliery barrel, kind of a couple little turns, thought that he got the score. So he went into the beach with 2.5 minutes remaining. The judges ended up giving him a 5.17, not the score that he needed, but he was literally in the contest zone on the sand when they called out the score. There's 2 minutes on the clock. Brett Simpson has the lead. He's in the water by himself, and Gabriel basically went in too early. It was an unbelievably rookie move. The commentators were shocked. They didn't know. They thought maybe he was pissed that Brett got the score for doing two backside turns on the previous wave. And so he was in there to go yell at the judges, which I thought was incredibly childish. But the fact that he left the water thinking that he got the score prior to having the judges call out the score was also incredibly childish. I think that was...
Well, you're assuming horribly. A lot. You're assuming a lot here, though. You're sort the of one like, thing do you know that that's what he was going to do, that that was his intent?
No, I don't. But the one thing I know for sure was that he got out of the water with 2.5 minutes left, which that there's no good reason to do.
I would agree with that. And I'll say this. Gabriel Medina is easy to dislike. He's not somebody, in my opinion, that, and we've gone over this ad nauseum, but his hat just got a little blacker.
Oh, yeah.
And it's easy. You can see why now, you know, a lot of us are like, would love to see Mick or Kelly snatch victory from the jaws of Gabe's defeat.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, I've been kind of not
you want Gabe to win the world title. Gabe, you want Gabriel Medina to win the world title.
I just recognize his talent. That's all it is. Look, they're all talented. And I don't discount it. No, but he's talented on a different level.
He is. He's a great surfer. There's no denying that he's one of the top five surfers.
I don't discount his talent just because he's Brazilian. That's the difference between us. Okay.
Well, I discount anyone's talent that's not North American because I'm rooting for North America.
Exactly. And I don't. So at any rate, him making that maneuver by exiting the water with 2.5 minutes left, I thought was disrespectful to Brett. It was presumptuous and egotistical and just, I was not a fan.
It was Brazilian.
I don't know. Go ahead, maybe
just
so.
Say it.
Maybe
just
so.
Say it. It was awfully Brazilian.
Maybe that's what it was. I was just offended by it. And so I was glad that he didn't get the score. And I didn't think he deserved the score. I thought he was surfing very stiff and awkward and not like himself. And so I was glad that Brett was able to kind of dethrone Gabby and send the world title race to Pipeline.
I was sort of surprised by the score Brett Simpson got on that left.
Were you really?
Yeah, I was. You know, it was basically two turns. Mm-hmm. It was speedy, crucial. The second turn was certainly, incredible. It was vertical and it was,
drifted.
But it was a white watery, you got to admit it, that section of the wave, it was kind of white watery and it just wasn't very sexy. The turn was incredibly sexy, but the actual wave it was just two turns. Gabby got incredible tube, did two turns, and the power of the wave, he was sort of all around the power of the wave. And I don't know. I could see why if you're in Gabby's camp, you're a little frustrated. And it seems a little, it just wasn't clear cut. Let me put it that way. And generally, it's almost, I've always said this, that you have to knock the champion out.
Of course.
Now, Gabe's not the champion yet, but I think Kelly would have got the benefit of the doubt there.
Well, that's a good, we've discussed this a lot over the last year and a half. You have to wonder if Gabe got the wave that Brett got, where he did those two exact same backside turns, what score would they have given Gabe? And if Brett would have gotten the barrel and the two turns that Gabriel got, what score would they have given Brett? And I think that you have a good point that if Gabe would have done those backside two turns, they probably would have given him a 3, where they gave Brett a 5.77. And if Brett would have got the barrel and the two turns, they probably would have given him a 7 instead of the 5, because it's the number 32 surfer overachieving. So they give him kind of a better score, whereas the number 1 surfer underachieving, what I mean?
No, you're absolutely right.
It's weird the way that works.
Well, it brings into account, the subjectivity of judging. Is surfing a sport in the truest sense of the word, where you score your own points and you don't have to rely on anyone else,
Yeah,
fascinating round 3. And then, of course, so we've got this great build-up to Gabby winning the world title. That's pulled from underneath him based on this really awkward heat. And then we've got Kelly in the very next heat who, the door's wide open. Opportunity is in front of him. All he has to do is get through the heat. And he's failed, and the wave sort of failed. And this sort of brings up what we were talking about with France last week, that these beach breaks can be wild card spots where the wave and the conditions have a lot to do with who gets through heats and who doesn't.
Do you think we need both France and Portugal on the tour because they're such similar waves?
Well, here's the thing is that when you look at it from a global perspective and all the interests involved, Europe wants two events on tour. And France is a big part of European surfing. Portugal is a huge part of European surfing. So politically, to just look at it from the prism of, hey, let's just go to the Great Wave, and that's it. Well, we'd go to Morocco. But there's no surfing in, you know, there's no surf industry in Morocco. Or we'd go to some other wherever in Europe that's, I don't know where. But
yeah,
my point is that these spots are kind of like the Huntington Beach tour event. It's like, hey, this is where the industry is, man.
Sure.
You know, like, this is where we all surf. This is where we all live. This is where we live and breathe and dream about surfing. This is surfing in Europe.
Yeah.
And so if you're going to have a tour stop here, these two spots are where it's at.
But we don't need it.
We don't need it from the
otherwise.
Right. We don't. Not from the prism of you and I, fans.
Right.
You know,
I fully agree. It feels like the same exact contest we were watching last week in France, you know, or two weeks ago.
Not dream tour stuff. Let's put it that way.
But I mean, when the waves are good, I want to see it. So I think it warrants having one of them. Like the way that the waves are right now,
I would say Portugal's better.
I would say so too.
Portugal, the super tubes as a wave is always, you know, it's a boogie board spot. It's known for tubes. And
so to bring people up to speed real quick, Mick has the backup score of like a 5-6-7, and then Jordy got a 7-6-7. So Jordy needs a 7.01 to make it through. All right, nobody cares.
Nobody cares.
But so the Kelly Aritz heat, I disagree with you. I think Kelly had opportunities. I don't think the waves failed him is what I disagree with. I think Kelly had opportunities. He floundered once again, which he's done in Portugal multiple times. He lost last year to the wild card. And he just doesn't, again, he doesn't showcase the drive that he's had in previous years. What was interesting is in his post-heat interview with Rosie Hodge, she's like, well, you know, I guess this takes the title race to pipe. And Kelly's like, what? I thought I was out of the race. She's like, no, you're still in it. He's like, I broke my board into three pieces thinking that I was out of the title race and gave it away to the fans.
Well, here's the thing. What's so great about what you just brought up is that that really highlights what the point you're trying to make. In normal situations, Kelly's totally on top of all that.
Unbelievable.
Sean Doherty wrote a great piece about how, you know, really it's been in Kelly's hands a few times this year, and he has failed to. He's sort of like you know, sleepwalking, so to speak. Like, he doesn't seem to have that gumption or that extra magical spark that we're used to seeing in Kelly Slater, where he really snatches it, takes control of it, realizes it's in front of him, and does the most with it, and really polishes the diamond or the jewel, if you will. And
which was my point last week, but you disagreed with it last week. And I'm just saying, here's more evidence.
Yeah,
even Kelly Slater himself said in that post,
just as you now hate Gabe, I agree with you.
Okay, thank you. Well, he admitted that he had multiple chances in that post-heat interview.
Well, he said what was most interesting, right, was what he said about there's something in my life that's not in tune. Yeah.
And he said, I've dropped the ball at multiple events, and it's the most frustrating title race I've ever had. And he called himself Butterfingers. Just keeps slipping through his hands over and over again.
Yeah.
Now, all that being said, Aritz surfs incredibly. And the day before, when they didn't run the event and everybody was surfing and Kelly did the 540, Aritz was surfing out in front of the contest venue by himself, 8 to 10 foot onshore, dredging barrels. And he got one clip that was like an A+ 8 foot barrel.
Yeah, yeah.
And so it's like Aritz is out there training when everybody else is down, just free surfing, having a good time. So I think that says something about Aritz that I'd just like to, identify.
Yeah, Aritz is a tube rider. That's one of the things you can say about him. He's a charger. There's been some footage of him down in mainland Mexico getting some, you know, incredible bombs as well. So
in Mundaka, where he's from, Spain, you know. Right. The other thing that we need to point out about Gabriel's post-heat interview is that I was making presumptions about why he left the water when I was watching the heat live, but in his post-heat interview, he did admit that he thought he got the score and that's why he left the water. So one of those presumptions that I made was correct.
Wow.
Well,
it certainly was one of the most fascinating moments of all year on tour.
Yeah, it was.
Was this situation that unfolded here as we all watched it and scratched our heads. It made for great drama. It made for great must-watch TV type stuff.
One other detail that I think is worth pointing out is when Kelly was watching Gabriel and Brett's heat from the contest arena, putting his wetsuit on, he was wearing sunglasses. The first time in 30 years of my life I've ever seen Kelly Slater wear sunglasses.
Old man blue blockers, or?
I don't know what they were, but I mean, think about it. Have you ever seen Kelly wear sunglasses?
No, it's a good point.
Never. He'll be on the boat in Tahiti after post-heat wins in the midday sun, not wearing sunglasses, literally for 20 years on tour. I've never seen him wear sunglasses before. And it sounds like I'm joking, but it's like I've made note of it over the years. And then I saw him in that Heat, and I'm like, what the heck? He's off his game, dude.
Yeah, I don't know. That's interesting.
At any rate, world title race goes to Pipeline. John is actually out of it now because he lost just this morning to Jordy Smith in the semifinal. And Mick Fanning is still in it because he's in the final, potentially going to win this event. But I think they haven't run all the numbers yet, but I think that even though Mick is still in it, if Gabriel at least makes the quarters at Pipe, there's nothing Mick can do to win it. Like, even if Mick won the event and Gabriel makes the quarters, Gabe still wins the world title.
Yeah, we'll have to look into it. I know that they're doing the numbers crunch now, and I was under the assumption that all he has to do is get out of the third round.
Oh, at Pipeline?
Yeah, Gabe. All he has to do is get out of the third round.
Even with Kelly?
But I could be wrong. I don't know. We need to look at it. Because there were so many different things floating around on the internet yesterday, I couldn't make heads and tails of it.
Right, right. Another couple things worth pointing out in this event so far is Jordy's been surfing incredibly well. He's not in contention for the world title, but he got a 9.5 in the round three heat, I think, which was just unbelievable. And he's been surfing well today. John's had 2.10s. John looks so in form. It was a shame.
John's the world champ. Let's just be clear.
Think so?
Well, if you were to scrub all the scoring and just show all of the events and go, which guy's the best guy, who would you choose as your world champion?
John, without a doubt.
He's like what would be the terminology for that? When there's a champion by the masses, you know, like the champion that's chosen by the masses, regardless of the subjectivity of the judging.
Yeah.
He's our champion.
Yeah, I agree. Maybe we'll see him win something next year, you know? I was going to ask you, too, how do you feel about, like, they're basically running this event in 2.5 days? Like, today, they started with the last two heats of round three, all of round four, five, quarter, semis, and finals, meaning Mick, who is surfing his round three heat, would have had to surf five times if he lost round four.
Are they up against the end of the waiting period?
Yeah, tomorrow's the last day. No, there's 2 or 3 days left, but the swell window's gone.
Well, you know what? My feeling is these guys are professional athletes, or so they say, and so this is part of the deal. And if you don't like it, leave.
Okay, I agree with that, but as a fan, I almost don't enjoy it as much crammed into a short period of time. I want to see it stretched out over a week where we see a variety of conditions and they have to try to adapt, you know?
Sure. I mean, and as a fan, we want it to be 8 to 10 foot pumping, thumping barrels too. It is what it is, you know? We would all love that perfect fan experience. We're dealing with Mother Nature. We're dealing with so much subjectivity in this sport. This league is, you know, just riddled or addled or adled with are any of those words?
No.
With with, you know, subjectivity, you know, with conditions, with the judging.
Well, what about Portugal has a lot of nooks and crannies, and so there's been a lot of swell when they weren't running the event, and bad winds with that big swell, which meant that the contest site, the waves weren't necessarily good, but right around the corner they were pumping. So we've seen a bunch of free surf footage and images where they're getting perfect barrels down the beach. And that was one of the things Kelly said about his heat that he lost, was he woke up early in the morning, went a couple miles down the road and surfed perfect barrels by himself for 3 hours, came back to the contest and was exhausted. And that was one of the reasons why he lost his heat. That's more discussion, I guess, just in where is his headspace if he's doing that instead of trying to beat a Ritz. But I would also just point out that, like, I don't know.
Kelly does that. I think those guys do that anyway.
I don't think they, I mean, yeah, some of them do, but
maybe not 42-year-olds, but I think the 22-year-olds do that.
When he was going up against Andy Irons for world titles and it came down to the final at Pipeline, he wasn't doing that. Well, he wanted to win the final at Pipeline. Yeah. You know what I mean? So his focus has shifted is all. But during one of those free surf sessions, we saw the spin heard round the world, dude. Yeah, you want to talk about that?
Yeah, the rotation heard round the world. Now, I guess it was a 540. Some are saying 720.
It was a 540.
No, I mean, I know it was a 540, but some are saying a 720. Some are saying Kelly saying an 810, right?
Kelly's an idiot.
But regardless, fascinating rotation, especially because of the offshore breeze. You know, you would think that would be difficult based on the wind. You know, usually they like a little onshore breeze to get it out. But Look, I'm no aerialist, but and you don't have to be to just appreciate. This was on par with when Tony Hawk did the 900. This was like earth-shattering, groundbreaking maneuver here in this sport. And well, and he's raised the bar. And in many ways, it was sort of a subliminal, you know, like Kelly kind of doing a mind warp on Gabby. I don't think it was, there was any purpose to that. Yeah.
Right.
And John. But he basically said, hey, you know, I may or may not be leaving after one more event here, but this is the new mark. Good luck, you know. And oh, by the way, you got to do it when you're 42 as well.
Yeah. So to reset that topic, for those, I'm sure everybody has seen it, but if you haven't, Kelly did a 540, full frontside aerial 540 rotation. It was in a free surf session, documented by multiple angles on video and still cameras. Gabriel Medina was actually surfing down the beach in that same session. John was nowhere to be seen, but at the end of the little profile video that Peter King put out on Tour Notes, Kelly calls out John, and he's like, hey man, that section was out there for anybody to have. Where was John right now? Well, he's probably at home editing videos, you know? So kind of called him out.
I believe that John was with Peter Mal surfing one of the big wave spots in Portugal.
I saw some of that footage. Was that the same day?
Yeah, it was.
So talking about 540, 720, whatever, he does 540 degrees rotation in the air and lands fakie or backwards.
Yeah, fins first.
Fins first. And then completes another half a rotation, landed in the whitewash. So the 720 is completed, but, you know, 180 of it is in the whitewash. So I'm calling it a 540 because 540 degree rotation in the air itself.
Yeah, and that's fine. That's what it was. And that's more than enough.
Yeah. And Stab Magazine interviewed Dane Reynolds about it. And Dane's comment was, I wouldn't think that Kelly has even tried that before, which is crazy. Pretty much looks like he's hitting the lip. He doesn't know exactly what he's going for. And he just gets crazy pop off the lip. And he's like a cat and he always lands on his feet. Him and John have that cat-like ability to just land on their feet, unquote, by Dane Reynolds.
Yeah, so, that's pretty good breakdown from an expert. So, yeah.
Yeah, and Craig Anderson was saying like he's actually been trying to do the rotation and he almost stomped one a couple days ago.
Whatever, but, dude.
Well, he was asked for his comments. It's not like he just tweeted it.
Yeah, but that's the wrong thing to say. Well, I've actually been trying to do.
Well, they were asking, you know.
I know, but you.
All right.
But I mean, think about it. Like, if you were asked about it, wouldn't you say, "Hey, this is what he did," rather than "This is what I'm doing"?
Sure. But I think Dane has a good point. Kelly, even when he said, like when they interviewed him after the fact, it was like, I don't think he was trying to do it. He just had a ton of speed, a perfect section, and just tried to do a fast rotation, and he ended up spinning. He does like a double grab on the toe side rail just for a split second, and even that looks improvised. Doesn't look like he's trying to go for a grab at the beginning, but it just gets a little wily, and he grabs it. Incredible aerial, best air I've ever seen in my life. It was really amazing. I woke up in the morning, saw it, was just freaking out, and then I mean, it got a million views, I think, in one day. TMZ posted it. Huffington Post posted
ESPN
it.
ESPN Sports Center. It was on ESPN Sports Center.
Yeah, tons of mainstream.
It was a breakthrough,
press.
You know, maneuver, and certainly a watershed moment for the sport.
Yeah, Kelly talked about it on Instagram, and he actually later deleted this caption. I think there was a little controversy about it because he said he spent the night texting with Todd Richards, the snowboarder, trying to figure out and find a name for it, like hashtag Ebola air, like Ebola air.
But it's bad.
Because it spread fast, but too soon.
No, that's wrong. I'm glad he deleted that.
That's why he deleted it. But that was the first line of his Instagram post, or the claim jumper, he called it. And
the Huey Lewis in the news.
The Huey Lewis. And that's kind of what he stuck with was we're going to call it the hashtag Huey. But the Ebola air, I think, was what got him into hot water.
For
so
sure.
He deleted the post.
That's a bad move.
Bad call.
He's just trying to be clever. And, you know, he's, you know, that's just in bad taste. But everyone does those things. And I'm going to give him a pass.
Are you?
Of course.
That's nice of you, Scott.
Yeah. I mean, we're all human.
Yeah.
No one's perfect.
Although
your hair is perfectly coiffed, I got to say.
Is it really? How about that? I did not comb it today. Thank you. Too bad we don't have any video to showcase this.
Oh, Lordy.
So, yeah, interesting. Huge air. What else, dude? Any other thoughts on the air heard around the world?
You know, just that it broke my internet that day. You know, it was that air and the amount of people that reposted it. It was just nonstop. At some point, don't you get kind of frustrated with that? Like, look, everyone's posting the same thing. You know?
Yeah, so I can't post it. Like, I was going to post it, and then I just realized, like,
everyone's posting it.
Yeah, like, there's no point in posting it. How do you feel about the name, the Huey?
Oh, that's fine. Whatever. I'm not, you know, it doesn't rock me one way or the other, you know?
Yeah.
I don't care either way.
I was waiting for you to give me some sort of Huey Lewis lyrical pun right there.
No. You know, I'm stoked for Kelly. It's really cool. The thing that I sort of chew on is, you know, that post-Heat interview where he said, there's something that's not right in my life. You know, yeah. Kelly's so in tune with his whole being, spiritual, emotional, physical. And, you know, I think that he knows what's wrong in his life. He's just not going to say it, but there's something that's, whatever it is, he's so in tune with what's going on within him that...
If you had to speculate.
I don't know. I'd hate to speculate, but there's something that he needs to get right. And
I have a speculation.
That's fascinating. Go ahead, speculate away.
I've said it before. I just think he's got Outer Known, a clothing brand that he's trying to launch.
Yeah.
Could you imagine developing international distribution, all the production things that you have to think about? I mean, all the branding, all the licensing. Like, it's just like an unbelievable amount of work.
Yeah.
And he's actively involved. He takes pride in being involved in the production process and Perps, the energy thing, or the health drink brand, you know? It's like he's got all these other balls that he's juggling. Plus, his son is about to win a world title. John.
Mick Fanning just won the Mochi Rip Curl Pro.
Yeah, worth noting, Jordy did not get a backup score. No. Jordy only had a 7.67, never got a backup score. Mick had a 9 and a 6.5.
And the 6.5, he got under priority, under Jordy's priority, and there was a bit of a paddle battle.
Yeah.
I don't know if you saw that.
Yeah, pretty epic event, man.
Or so Mick's now in the running for the world title.
Yeah.
But a lot of bad stuff has to happen to Gabe mostly, but also to Kelly Mick to win a back-to-back.
And Kelly needs to put that other bullcrap on the back burner and just focus on winning pipeline.
What about his girlfriend?
What about her?
I don't know. Maybe there's, you know, when you think about unease in your life, you can generally look to your significant other as a cause for some of that. Maybe there's some of, I mean, you mentioned the business point, the business aspects of his life, but maybe there's also that, you know, who knows? Again, pure speculation. We don't have any insight into it. We're just sitting here riffing about it.
If I had to offer my, I don't know, mildly informed opinion, I would say I'm not too concerned about that. Just judging, I mean, I follow him and his girlfriend on social media and all that, and they seem like they're having a blast in Europe, hanging out, doing the wine and cheese thing, going shopping in Paris and all that. Standard operating procedure for them. So I don't know.
And maybe it's just internal, you know, like, do I start a family? Do I get married? Do I,
like,
where
that.
Do, what, you know, there's, as you mentioned, it's almost like he's getting tugged in 15 different directions.
Yeah.
He can handle 14 different directions, but he can't really handle 15, you know, whatever it is. There's that one thing that's just kind of put him over the edge where his mind space isn't quite focused, isn't quite clear.
Right. I'd like to point out, we have,
by the way, Sean Doherty wrote a great piece on Kelly's mind space.
Yeah.
If you get a chance, go to coastalwatch.com and read Sean Doherty's blog. Yeah, and we'll put it on our website.
Yeah, we'll put everything on our websites, including the post-Heat interviews with Kelly and Gabriel, which were both very telling, I thought.
Yeah.
Gave a lot of insight when they both lost in round three. So surfsplendorpodcast.com and downthelineradio.com. Well, the Rip Curl event's over, so let me reset with some follow-up from our last episode. You and I had a conversation about free surfing versus kind of professional competitive surfing, the ASP. And you were saying the ASP is gaining more popularity and you think free surfing is kind of going to become less and less popular.
I was taking
the opposite stance.
Maybe let's rephrase that.
Okay.
Free surfing is what we all do. That's not going to be less popular. What I'm suggesting is that the power of the quote unquote free surfer as that surfer relates to selling product for the industry brands, for Rip Curl and for Hurley, those companies, I don't think it has as much cachet as the professional surfer. I think the professional surfer has more cachet than he's ever had with these brands. The whole concept of Clay Marzo, Dave Rostovich, Craig Anderson, these free surf types. Now, there will be one or two that still move the meter, so to speak, but I'm of the opinion that we're going to see less and less of those free surfers move the meter. And I mean, you know, sell product for these companies. I don't mean like who's, everyone's putting out great video clips, but are they selling product? Do they mean anything? Are they a substantial asset for these industry, for the surf industry companies?
When you're hiring for a small business, you want to find quality professionals that are right for the role, and there's no faster or effective way than through LinkedIn Jobs. Your time and capital are precious, and there is a powerful resource that can help you focus on what you're good at and integrate people into your team seamlessly to help grow your business. LinkedIn Jobs has created the tools to find the right professionals for your team efficiently and for free. LinkedIn isn't just another job board. Everyone is already on LinkedIn with their resumes and references, and now LinkedIn has designed a hiring platform to connect you with candidates specifically qualified for the job that you post about. More than a billion professionals meticulously organized to connect people by skill set to help us all advance our position. 2.5 million businesses already use LinkedIn for hiring, and 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. It's that fast, easy to use, and effective. LinkedIn Jobs can help you write job descriptions, filter the right person to you, and give you the tools to help you interview them like a pro. LinkedInJobs.com/surf is where you go to post your job for free. Yes, totally free. That's linkedinjobs.com/surf to post your job for free. Terms and conditions apply.
I kind of, we got some feedback about that conversation on social media and via email. People had opinions about it. I'm wondering if the free surfer, the ultra talented free surfer, is able to straddle both worlds nowadays a little more effectively than they were in the past. Like, for example, John Florence.
Well, John, he's not best, a free surfer.
But no, but my
I
point
agree
is,
with you. John's a great example.
He's the best free surfer in the world right
Absolutely.
Now. And in the past, like Dane Reynolds' era, the short past.
But Dane Reynolds' era is over, isn't it? I love it that you stated it like
I'm
that.
I'm okay with that.
The Dane Reynolds era is officially over. I'm with you on that.
5 years ago, Dane would have just said, look, I'm going this path just to do the free surf thing. I think John, the modern surfer, has the ability to be like, look, I can be the best free surfer in the world, put out the best video clips, and still vie for a world title.
Yes.
And so both things can coexist nowadays.
Well, not only for John. Name another. Kelly, right?
Yeah, John.
All of the guys that do it are already pro surfers, is my point.
Jordy.
Pro surfer.
Yeah, but
on the tour.
I would also argue, though, that we're in an era right now.
All the guys that straddle both sides have already proven themselves on tour.
John.
Craig Anderson. Go with a guy that.
I know.
Is Craig Anderson going to make his way onto the tour?
No, but I'm not disagreeing with you. But what I'm saying is that John developed more cachet as a free surfer before he joined the world title or even the QS. He was getting cover shots at Pipeline since he was 6 years old and putting out banger video clips. You know what I mean? So he didn't have to do the world tour if he didn't want to. But my point is just that currently, I don't think that there's a great example of a free surfer who's just pursuing free surfing in and of itself. We're kind of in a downtime.
Who are they? I mean, they all are. I would argue that all the free surfers are. Like if you know, Clay Marzo, Craig Anderson, Dane Reynolds, those guys, they're all pursuing it.
Yeah.
They're just failing. Well, none of those. Well, Dane, I think probably still moves the meter a little bit for Quicksilver, but
less, you're right. Month.
I would agree with that he's so, just... Yeah, he's waning.
I as a follow-up to our conversation, I did kind of a breakdown, social media breakdown of statistics with free surfers and world tour surfers. Instagram is kind of where surfing lives, you know, or the main social media app for surfers kind of to promote whatever it is that they're doing. Alana Blanchard has the most Instagram followers at 1.1 million. Kelly Slater is in second place with 894,000 followers on Instagram.
Both of them are on tour, on the world tour.
Correct. And
so they're not free surfers, in my opinion. I mean, purely free surfers.
No, I know. Okay. I'm sorry. Maybe making your point for you here with these stats. Gabriel is 586. Fanning is 288,000. Coco Ho and Julian Wilson, 236,000. 100,000. 236,000. Yeah. And then John Florence, 222. Steph Gilmore, 207. And then
where do we get a pure free surfer in this list?
That's what I'm getting at, dude. Under 100,000 followers, Dane Reynolds at 91. Luke Davis, who I mentioned last time, is at 79. And I was drawing a comparison between Luke Davis and Kai Otten because they're both on Reef, kind of on the same tier, but one's free surfer, one's World Tour surfer. Kai Otten's got 24,000, whereas Luke has 79. So if you're doing an apples and apples comparison, those would be the two guys I think you could look to. And I would say Luke's moving more board shorts than Kai, but
I don't think Luke Davis is moving any board shorts.
And that's fair. But to your point, these World Tour guys all have around 250,000 until you get to like the top three guys who have 500,000 and close to 1,000,000.
And where do a lot of the free surf moments that you see from these World Tour guys, where do you see that stuff? The ASP puts that stuff up on their website. They're like, hey, Leyde in Portugal.
Yeah.
Watch this incredible tube from Aritz, from Kelly, from the guys. Watch this 540. A lot of the stuff, oh, we're in Tahiti on a Leyde. Look at Kelly at the right. You know, like a lot of the free surf stuff that's put out is done by the ASP.
Yeah, that is true. They're not, the surfers aren't really doing as much self-promotion as they used to. I think the model in the past was like instantaneous, whatever we get today, let's post it tonight. But I think a lot of them are holding stuff back now and then maybe doing a once a year video, kind of like they used to 5 years ago or 10 years ago. Josh Kerr just released the Kersey movie about a week and a half ago, and I watched it, and it's good. It's kind of his A-clips from the last year or two. It's not phenomenal, but it's good. What I liked about it was that they did interviews with Kelly Slater, his Josh Kerr's wife, his kids, and some people that gave you insight into the background, backstory and his background into his life. One of the interesting things that I had heard a number of times reported was that he was hit by a car on the North Shore about 10 years ago. He left a party drunk, was walking down the road, and actually got hit as a pedestrian by a vehicle and broke his leg. And he was laying on the side of the road, passed out from the pain, but also he had been drinking. And coincidentally, Kelly Slater found him.
Kelly, really?
Kelly Slater's
that's
walking.
An incredible story.
Kelly's walking down Cam Highway and is like, oh my god,
what's Kelly Slater doing in the middle of the night walking down Cam Highway?
Who knows?
That needs to be okay. So what time of night is this, do you know?
I don't recall, but I mean, it was after a party.
Kelly Slater found Kersey somewhere.
So Kelly calls Kelly
at like midnight,
and Josh Kerr knew who Kelly was, but he didn't know Kelly knew who he was, but Kelly did. So Kelly calls the guys at Rusty and he's like, hey dude, Josh Kerr's out. I think he called an ambulance first and then called the Rusty team managers. Yeah. It's like, hey, Josh Kerr's laying out here with a broken leg. Paramedics are coming. And they're like, who is this? And he's like, it's Kelly Slater. And they're like, yeah, right, dude. And they hung up on him. So then eventually the Rusty guys found out that this was all substantiated. So they call Kelly back and they're like, hey dude, I'm so sorry for hanging up on you. We thought it was a prank call. Right. And Kelly's like, oh, no worries. You know?
Yeah.
But I mean, that's, it's the North Shore. It's
that's
a small.
Interesting. So that's the most interesting part of the Kersey movie. And I've never even seen the movie. And the reason I say that is that you're right. We're at this place where we're kind of inundated with stuff. Like, it took a 540 for us to even go, oh, okay, cool, I'll watch this.
Totally.
You know what I mean? And it's that case of too much stuff. And,
yeah.
And in a way, it's kind of like the guy who holds back, like Dane does, you know, and goes, look, you're going to get my next clip in 6 months. And there's some natural buildup. That's a kind of a smart move. It's getting to a point where it's like, okay, another aerial, you know, I get it. Or, you know, not, you know, that doesn't, I'm not saying we don't enjoy watching new stuff. You know, we're especially like swells, like, look, there's a new swell, but it, there is a sort of, we've been overwhelmed.
We have been. And the problem with Dane doing that is that he hasn't been posting a video every 6 months.
Well, it's better be better than the last one is the thing. And Dane, I mean, he looks pretty large. He's got like a muffin top going.
Whoa, dude. I love muffin tops.
Apparently so does Dane.
Top of the muffin
tree. Now, I don't know what he looks like today. I'm sure he's in great shape. I'm sure he's out at Rincon right now. Yeah. But he's not sprightly.
Well,
is that a word?
I'm not sure. But, God, what's the name of that? That miniseries. Epic TV is the website. They are doing a miniseries. I mean, literally, it's called miniseries because Dane Reynolds Filmer is nicknamed Mini. And so they're doing this miniseries focused on Mini Blanchard, Jason Mini Blanchard, Dane Reynolds Filmer. I think it's a 3-part series. They just released episode 1. And so it's cool because it's focused on the filmer himself, but Minnie's been a big part of Dane's life and promoting Dane's career. They've worked together longer than any surfing and filming team in the history of surfing. And he kind of started working with Dane when Dane was 16 or so, and he's helped really mold Dane's image, I guess, and persona, because he's been protective of the footage that he gets. And so this series is focused on their relationship. It's in 3 parts, starting when he was 16 and kind of chronologically bringing us up to speed. So I'll post that on Surf Splendor. Well,
that sounds fascinating too.
See, I thought it was good.
Anything that doesn't have actual surfing in it kind of interests me, you know, where we get some backstory and...
Yeah. And the surfing that is in it is archival footage, which is also interesting to see Dane ripping at a young age. He was riding really big boards.
Oh, sure. We all were. 6'2".
But
right?
Another kind of thing just that I saw last night at the last minute was there's another filmer in that area that's been getting a lot of hype. His name's I don't know if it's his name, but his Instagram name and his Vimeo name is Norwell. And he'll just post random clips of Bobby and Dane and all this stuff. And apparently he had a little falling out with Minnie. I personally had a little interaction with Minnie, which was, I don't know. Not too cool. I guess Minnie's kind of a dick. Oh my God. Just to call it out.
Oh my God, what happened?
And so apparently,
or you are, we're not sure. Like Minnie's got a side to this story, right?
I'm sure Minnie does have a side to this story. And
what happened?
Well, Norwell basically posted this Instagram last night going, "Hey, thanks to Minnie Blanchard for harassing me about me posting Dane footage online. I'm now posting all of my Dane footage online for free for anybody to download. If you go to my Vimeo page, it's accessible entirely for free."
So there's a Norwell versus Mini drama.
Exactly.
That's happening. And it is a mini drama, isn't it? It's kind
it
of small.
Kind of a mini drama.
And you can get free Dane footage because Norwell's basically given Mini the FU.
Exactly.
Radical.
Yeah. So, and Norwell's kind of...
I'm going to get that footage. I'm going to be...
Yeah.
I'm going to make my own little mini drama.
Here's specifically what Norwell's Instagram post said. It said, "Due to Minnie Blanchard being a disrespectful dick, free daily Dane Reynolds footage, raw footage, available for download at vimeo.com/Norwell9. And then there's, of course, a bunch of stuff in the comment section.
You could
do so
much fun stuff with that content.
Yeah.
So okay, give me some comments. What are some of the comments?
Well, Minnie Blanchard. Well,
did Minnie chime in?
Minnie chimed in.
Uh-huh.
Basically, people just saying, "Hey, that's a really heavy call. Minnie's a legend, you know."
Oh.
And then Norwell's like, "Hey, you reap what you sow." People are like, "It's just unprofessional to do something like that." Minnie finally chimed in at some point and said, "Cool, dual angles." And so Minnie's, I guess, got a light heart about it. But my personal interaction with Minnie was Quicksilver hired me to film. I did work for Quicksilver, video work for a couple of years. And when the U.S. Open came into Huntington Beach, they were like, "Hey, follow Dane and Kelly around and just shoot the free surfing stuff. Whenever you see him running down the beach, you know, just tag along." So I'd been shooting a number of days of Dane free surf stuff. And Minnie comes up to me hot-headed, like with a lot of aggression, and was like, "Hey, who are you?" And I'm like, who are you? You know, I didn't really give him any information or tell him what I was doing. And I didn't quite figure out who he was at first. He's like, "Why are you filming Dane?" And I'm like, "Dude."
Because he's the best surfer in the world at the moment.
And it's a beach with thousands of cameras on it. What are you talking about? And he's like, "What are you going to do with that footage?" And I'm like, "Dude, don't worry about
it.
Watch it." Yeah. And so I never said anything to him, but he was just coming at me with a lot of aggression. And I was like, "Who is this guy?" And then I kind of put two and two together once he walked away.
Yeah.
But it's like,
All right. So he was protecting his scene and he saw you as a...
Which I kind of understand. It's like he's being protective of Dane and that's respectable in a sense. But what are you going to do, man?
Yeah.
Beat up random people? There's thousands of cameras on the beach. Like, that's not really the right approach if you're trying to protect your buddy's image. I respect the notion of wanting to protect his image, but yeah, I don't know.
Whatever.
You know? So anyways, that was just a little interesting Instagram drama I saw last night. But the miniseries is worth watching.
Do you think Minnie has talks with Dane about his weight gain? Like, dude, you need to, you're like, you're looking a little large.
I have no idea, dude.
How does that go down? Does it go down like I don't how know much power does Minnie have over Dane?
I don't think he's a life coach. Let's put it that way. One of the things Minnie said in this thing was like, he was working at the produce or the meat counter at a grocery store prior to getting into surf filming, you know? So I don't think that he really has a lot of, I don't know, life coach. Right.
He's not like Tony Robbins.
Therapeutic, yeah, coaching or schooling background or anything.
At some point though, he's going, dude, you know, it's obvious that you're gaining a little bit of weight.
Yeah.
It's good for your power surfing, but...
Dude, if somebody's paying you $4 million a year just to free surf, why would you ever leave the beaches of Ventura?
Why wouldn't you eat a burrito constantly? And
exactly. And so...
Mixing a Coors Light, maybe.
More power to them, you know? Geez, dude, that's enough Dane talk. Follow-up conversation from last time, too. We were kind of open the show just talking about Journey because I think you... I forget how it happened, but... Coincidentally, the very following week, Steve Perry was filmed.
I saw that. That was so cool.
Steve Perry, former lead singer of Journey, was in the stands at the Giants game in San Francisco.
Giants baseball.
And the stadium started playing Don't Stop Believing, the Journey song. And then Steve Perry happened to be in the audience and he starts singing along with the song and the cameras find him and he ends up leading 43,000 fans in kind of a sing-along of Don't Stop Believing in Giants Stadium.
That was a really cool moment.
Yeah, kind of cool.
That was really neat.
We'll post that little video. Surf Splendor.
Did you read my blog? I wrote a follow-up blog on the Ryder Cup.
So are you writing? You got like a blog going and a forecasting thing going on your website now.
I'm trying to ramp my game up to David Lee Scales.
You are, dude.
I actually added some tags too, so we'll be able to see... I think I'm in the process of figuring it out. So we'll be able to see how many people are listening to this show.
So I'm impressed. This is not competing with me in any way because I only update when I have new episodes. You're updating daily now.
No.
Your forecast is
daily. Oh, yeah,
daily.
Forecast is daily. But I do a daily forecast for KPBS here in San Diego.
But you never put it on your website until last week.
Well, now
like
I do. Yeah,
week.
Now I am. Right.
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 Legit, dude.
Yeah.
You going to compete with like the surf lines of the world or what?
No.
Seems
surf
like
lines... I glean a lot of information from Surfline. I consider them a partner.
Fair enough.
I'm a big fan of Surfline.
So tell me about your blog, too.
Well, you tell me. Did you read about, I just basically, like last time, I think we talked about nation versus nation. Didn't we touch on the Ryder Cup concept a little bit?
We did, and that got a bit of feedback, too.
And so I was just thinking about it. I'm like, you know what? I should probably write out and kind of excavate my thoughts on the idea of a nation versus nation event with the elite of the world, the ASP's elite, not the ISA, not like, the has-beens that got kicked off the CT. And now, this isn't for, whoever. This is for the elite of the elite in each nation. And so, I'll let you read it if you want to read it. It's on the Boardroom's blog. But I was wondering if you read it.
No, I did not read it.
Now I know how you feel when you ask me if I listen to your show.
Did you listen to last week's John Van Hammersfeld episode of Surf Splendor?
I did not.
Did you even know it existed?
I did not know it existed.
So tit for tat, buddy.
Oh my God. We're doing a great job of sort of self-promoting each other's work.
I'll come to the Boardroom show. How's that?
You say that sort of half-heartedly like you have to go.
I don't. But I did not listen, but I did develop another thought about it. I don't think it needs to be a separate event, the Ryder Cup thing. What if the ASP just tabulates some sort of statistic throughout the regular CT year, and then at the end of the year shows how Brazil did versus Australia? And
yeah,
so
that would be neat, but I don't think that carries the same sort of... what I basically wrote about is that this is good for the WSL or the ASP, if you will, because what it does is it's going to bring nationalism will bring mainstream eyeballs to the sport. Like, for instance, I don't watch swimming, right? But when the Olympics are on, I want to watch Michael Phelps destroy the rest of the field. And that's right. The only time I'll watch swimming, and I'll be into it and I'll be stoked. Same with the World Cup of Soccer. Look, I'm not a football fan. I'm not a soccer fan, so to speak, right? Yeah. I don't watch the MLS. I'm not one of these Premier League guys. And there are a lot of guys out there that are into it, but when the World Cup is on, I will watch. And I'm not the only one. I did some research into the ratings, and World Cup ratings were off the chart. And the USA wasn't even in the final. The final for the World Cup ratings here in North America, it was like 26 million viewers. So taking that understanding and saying, hey, okay, if it works for these two sports, if it works for Olympic curling, if I'm watching Olympic gymnastics, something I normally would not watch, then it's not too far of a leap to say maybe it will work for surfing. We can get new mainstream eyeballs, which means new mainstream eyeballs for the sponsors of the WSL. By the way, I've heard some rumblings through the grapevine. None of this is, this is all sort of, coconut wireless sort of stuff, but well-placed individuals at some of the events. And I'm hearing that you know, things are not good for the ASP from a fiscal standpoint.
Really?
Now, again, I have nothing to base this on other than rumblings I'm hearing about, you know, Red Bull wanted to do this and certain people in the ASP were trying to leverage what Red Bull wanted to do against, you know, another drink.
Energy drink company.
Yeah. There's just a lot of stuff that I'm hearing. And again, I don't want to do, I'm a big fan. You and I are big fans. I want the ASP to succeed. I'm just telling you what I've heard through the grapevine. And again, it could just be that, just industry banter and nothing more, nothing less. But, you know, you got to wonder whether smoke, there's fire type thing.
For the record, Jordy is wearing his Red Bull hat on stage right now, that's been a discussion topic in the past, because that was going to be...
They're poo-pooing that, but he got grandfathered in because his contract was before the contract with Monster Energy Drink.
Yeah, and they put at every event, at every Portuguese event each year, they put these traditional Portuguese hats on the finalists once they get on stage. So Jordy has that hat on, but he has it on over his Red Bull hat, but pulled back so that you could still see the Red Bull logo on his ball cap.
Oh yeah, I'm looking at that. And that is classic.
So interesting.
Good for him.
So to your point though about the fiscal strugglings.
And I don't have anything to base this on. Like, I don't want to be the guy that's putting out negative energy about the ASP, but I did hear this. I was on a phone conversation with somebody who's in there with guys that are in there that know what's happening, and there's, you know,
here's the problem, dude.
How much do you think each one of these events costs
millions.
To put on? Millions, right? Yeah. Millions. Well, right now, like, I'm looking at the backdrop, and they've got Samsung Galaxy as a sponsor. Rip Curl's in there. I guess the city of Mochi. I don't even know what Mochi is.
It's like a data or a telecommunications company, I think.
So I'm just wondering if they're pulling it off financially. Yeah. Like, I'm looking at the landscape here and I'm going, man, are they pulling it off? Now, who knows? You know, maybe they are.
Yeah, but here's what you got to realize too, is that even if you have even if you have more money coming in than is going out with a business, the first few years
of
a business,
I know, this is a 4 or 5 year plan. I'm with
are
you.
Are so difficult. And so there's going to be challenges.
Well,
and
one of the biggest challenges is the ASP. Why they changed the name to the WSLs? Because they're having a hard time selling the ASP to some of these agencies. They're like, dude, you know, these guys were already in here 3 years ago and we poo-pooed it. And so they're doing all they can, and I'm stoked for them.
Yeah. I would say where there's smoke, you're right, there might be fire. But at the same time, some people are...
I think there are people out there that want to see the downfall of the WSL, of the ASP. I think there's people that are secretly like, cool, man, destroy it.
Those people I'm not interested in, though. You know what I mean? I mean, the powers that be are doing a phenomenal job. They're trying their best. I think that they're executing, but it's just, it takes a long time.
I agree.
And
I
there's
totally
so
agree.
Much gossip involved that's just going to thwart any progress that they make. So the few people who are in that board meeting that they probably shouldn't have been, because they're going to come out and gossip about it. You know what I mean? Like, those financial stuff, that financial stuff happens in every company, even successful companies. And that's why very few people are privy to that information, because it scares off shareholders and everybody else. So that's all I'm saying.
Yeah.
let me see. Oh, can I play something for you real quick?
Is it short and good?
It's fantastic, but it's not to do with the ASP.
All right, go ahead.
All right, dude, let me cue it up.
What do you got here?
You're going to be...
Is it music or is it you singing? What's going on
here?
Let
me see if the mics can pick up.
It's always 6 feet and perfect, which is what I've written down here. It's always 6 feet perfect in the cyber world. We're here to inform, entertain, and enlighten you, inspire you. And we're going to do our damnedest to do that. Now, if you want to get involved in the show, please give us a call. 877-792-SURF. That's 877-792-7873.
The voice sounds familiar, doesn't it?
That is me. That is my voice.
What does this sound like to you?
Is this the first ever in the lineup from Surfer Magazine?
It is the first ever in the lineup from Surfer Magazine.
Wow. That was in 2005.
November 2nd, 2005, with Sam George as your co-host.
Yeah.
And a listener actually sent this to me this week.
Well, that's pretty cool.
How crazy
is
that,
I'm stoked that somebody has it.
Yeah. Dude.
I've got a bunch of them. I don't know if I have the first one, but I've got a bunch of them on Mini DV because we taped those shows too. We didn't just do audio.
Okay.
We have videotape of that.
Okay. Pretty rad, dude. I listened to the full episode.
How was it?
Really interesting, actually. Really? Huh. Yeah. I thought it was really good. A lot of effort went into it. A lot of production value that we don't employ.
Yeah. I did do a lot of, like, I had a lot of sound bites. I did a lot of, like, I tried to make it like a real radio show that you would listen to, you know, sort of based on sports talk radio that you would hear on your drive home or whatever.
You did a good job, dude. I mean, there was, like you said,
well, it wasn't just me, by the way. I had a lot of help doing
it. Okay.
But I mean, it was my brainchild.
You did.
I'll tell you the backstory there is I went into my boss's office and I basically said, "Hey, I want to do a surf talk radio show." And he's like, "Not going to happen." You know? And I was like, "What do you mean? We got this thing called the internet. I'm the online editorial director. This is going to be, you know, everyone likes to talk about surf. All this stuff we talk about in the office all day long. Believe me, listeners out there want to know about that. You know, fans of Surfer Magazine want to know about all the inside. We have all the inside stuff, man. You in this office, you know, pro surfers are walking around. We can grab them, sit them down, blah, 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 blah." And the guy's like, "No, I'm not going to happen." Hmm. You know, and that was sort of the mindset at Surfer. It was very much a print mentality. It was like the magazine is what we're all about. Everything else is, yeah, okay, maybe cool idea. But, you know, at the end of the day, it was about, you know, a little power meeting with the publisher and the editor.
Right.
And you weren't invited in, you know. And it was awfully frustrating. But I basically said, okay, walked out of his office and just did it.
Really?
Yeah. And then his boss, one day in a meeting, goes, "Hey, why aren't we doing internet radio?" And I'm like, "I am." I go, "I am." And he goes, "You are? How come nobody told me about it?" And of course, my immediate boss sort of sulked away and, you know, slithered into his chair.
Well, it was really well done.
We spent, like, I think I told you, I dropped like $10,000 of their money on equipment. When in fact, we only need, I mean, look at you and I, we have about maybe $2,500 worth of equipment, 2 laptops and 2 microphones.
Yeah, times have changed.
Yes.
Interestingly, you opened up the show with the Allman Brothers song Blue Sky.
That does not surprise me at all. Some things never change.
No, because when you and I first recorded an episode together about a year and a half ago,
it was Blue Sky?
Same exact song. Not only was it Allman Brothers, but it was the same exact song.
That's my go-to song. Best song ever, by the way.
Well, you had a...
Right up there with Neil Young's Powderfinger.
You also had quite a bit of commercials in this first episode.
Yeah, we had sponsors, huh?
You did. One of which was...
We need those.
H2O audio commercial, which was an iPod housing device.
I used to wear it.
That's what you said. I was wondering if you were just
hyping it up. Oh, yeah. No, there's pictures out there on the internet of me surfing with my H2O audio.
Hilarious.
No, I loved it. And I still love it. It was just one of those things that, like technology, you know, it just, it went out of style. You know, the iPod is basically obsolete.
Yeah.
Nobody really listens to music anymore, or never, ever did, but I did.
Yeah.
In the water.
Yeah.
But anyway, yeah, H2O audio.
Hilarious, dude. Yeah. I can't imagine. Like,
hey, it is fun to sit in the lineup and listen to music.
But you had earphones in?
Oh, yeah, waterproof.
And so when you duck dive, they don't get ripped out of your ear? Or?
No, they sit back here kind of like behind your neck.
Huh. Interesting.
Yeah.
One other thing that was happening during this episode was Kelly and Andy were surfing in the Nova Shin Pro in Brazil. And for some reason, you guys were referring to it as not a rivalry. I guess Kelly and Andy were not fully acknowledging that they had a rivalry going. And you guys were kind of speculating that, like, I think this is more of a rivalry than these guys are letting on. Which, of course, you guys are right, because in hindsight, it is the greatest rivalry.
Right. And then in 06 was that epic moment at Pipeline.
Yeah,
with exactly. Andy and Kelly.
So kind of interesting just as a time capsule to go back and listen to.
Well, like, yeah, speaking of time capsules, you've seen them. I have tons of tapes of the show that
yeah.
I just need to get on the ball. And my computer doesn't even take input from a video camera anymore.
Right.
You know, like, things are changing.
Another thing, Sam George was your co-host. He is incredibly knowledgeable. And, like, everything that you guys talk about on the show, he has some story about it that he knew the guy that started.
Oh, yeah. No, it all involves Sam. It's all Sam all the time. Believe me, with Sam.
He's cool. I liked him.
No, he's a great co-host. He's a great talker, and he's very engaging. And that's why I had him. I'm like, Sam's going to carry the show for me because, you know, I'm sort of limited in my abilities to inform, engage, entertain. And two people, it works good.
Right.
Sam could carry a show on his own. But everything revolves around, like, basically Sam was there on the moon when the guy went golfing. You know what I mean? Like, Sam knew the guy that made the golf ball.
Right.
Like, Sam's in, it's like, you know, 6 degrees of separation with Sam George.
But it's true though, right? I mean,
I assume it is. Yeah. I
mean,
I can't say that it's not.
Smoke.
No. I mean, there's probably some editorial embellishment on some level somewhere, you know, whatever.
But also, his knowledge set is profound.
He's extremely smart. He's very well versed and well read. He knows surfing backwards and forwards. Now, you know, he's got sort of a, like we all do, we all have our sort of subjective prism that we see things through. And that's fair. Like, you know, like I said, we all have that.
Mm. You guys were talking about a wave pool as well that was being developed, which is funny because that was a conversation we had last week. So some of those topics that you guys had were like relevant to modern topics that we're still having 10 years later. He related the wave pool to sex with a blow up doll.
That's really good.
Yeah, I thought that was kind of funny. So that episode, I'll maybe email the guy that sent it to me and see if maybe he would allow me to post this available for everybody else.
Why wouldn't he? It's my content. I own it.
No. Do you physically have a
copy
of it?
Oh, I don't know. But I mean, what's he going to do? Hold on to it and try to sell it or something?
He's going
to
sell it back to you.
I may have it. I mean, it's out there in the internet world somewhere.
No. And I'm sure he'd be cool with it, but I thought it was cool that he sent it to me. He was actually,
who was it?
I'll look it up right now. He's from Idaho, I think.
Oh, really?
So landlocked listener in Idaho. Hmm. Really kind of interesting, you know, when you get emails like that.
That's cool that the guy still has. I wonder if he has all of those episodes. He should hold on to them. I guess they're like back issues of Surfer Magazine.
Yeah. Mark Corney is the guy's name. So thank you, Mark, for that. That was super entertaining to listen to. Scott, and it kind of made me feel more proud to be involved with this current endeavor. I mean, I knew that it had existed for a long time and all the good work that you did with it, but it's like, I don't know.
Well,
made me proud to be part of the legacy.
Well, thanks. I'm stoked to have you as a part of it because the show's better than ever, I think.
Thank
it's
you.
Really good. And, you know, we're coming up on the 10-year anniversary of Surf Talk Radio. There's some other Surf Talk radios out there that are going to claim that they've been around longer. But purely Surf Talk Radio, I believe. No, actually, there is the guy in Santa Barbara who's been doing it for a long time. Super cool guy.
Is it podcast, though?
No, he's actually was on the radio for a
right.
long time. He did a surf talk show, and it was a really good one too. And it was much more, it wasn't so pro surfing centric. It was more like environment, surf, kind of had like a, I guess I could characterize it as like a free surf type of show.
Okay.
You know, it was more like,
it
was more like Central Coast California type
right.
talk.
All right, I got two more.
What about the fappening?
Two more heady topics, one of which is the fappening, dude.
Explain the fappening to the listeners before you tell me more about the fappening.
I'm going to just say it's probably the best name for a news story that I've ever heard of. Fapping is a British term for masturbating, basically.
You're kidding. I had no idea. Fapping is masturbating in England?
Are you serious?
I did not know.
Oh, I thought you were just playing dumb. No. Yeah. To fap is to masturbate.
So, okay,
so,
interesting.
So anyways, somebody hacked into the cloud, the iCloud, and stole a bunch of nude photos from hundreds of female celebrities and then posted them out on the internet. Jennifer Lawrence, among the most famous A-list celebrities.
You have all those downloaded on your machine right now?
Kate Upton. Kate Upton, Jennifer Lawrence. I forget who else. It was just like a bunch of
celebrities.
How
do they look?
Well, let me get to the point real quick. One of the celebrities, quote unquote celebrities, was our own Alana Blanchard.
Alana. She's got nude photos out
there. Alana
had
nude photos saved on her iCloud.
How revealing are these Alana Blanchard
topless
nudes?
Topless, not bottomless.
And what kind of, is she like seductive or are they just like changing in her bathroom?
Kind of. So for the record, I've seen these photos.
Why did you say that with such a low tone of voice? Just go ahead and say it proudly.
I just want to make it known.
You're doing research.
Well, dude, it's for the show.
Exactly.
I'm not like a perv or
more
something.
Power
I'm
to
just
you.
Like, hey now. So,
high five.
So I will say it's not that fantastic. Let's get straight. There's naked.
She's not Pamela Anderson.
Well, let's just get it straight. If you want to see boobies on the internet,
they're
you can
there.
Find them.
Yeah. It's kind of like...
And fantastic ones, might I add. Yeah. Alana, we've seen her in all but nudity.
Right.
For years
and
years and
years.
Better
with the
A little bit. Like,
on.
I saw the photos and it's like, yeah, whatever, dude. I'm not even like really...
You didn't go fap.
I did not go.
Okay,
for the record, I did not.
All right, fair
And there were just selfies that she took with her camera. Maybe she's sending them to Jack Freestone, her boyfriend. That's kind of what they looked like.
Right,
you know?
Right.
So nothing that titillating.
That's too bad. Actually, it's kind of a bummer. This whole thing about, there's just this fine line between privacy and, you'd be bummed if it was your girlfriend or your wife. Like,
oh, yeah. I would never
allow
it.
There's a lot wrong with this fappening story, I think, that as guys our general position is cool and then you sit and you start to think about it, and I've got a daughter, and it just seems wrong deep down. It just feels wrong.
I honestly didn't think it was that cool when I heard of it. I felt the same way as you, where it's like, hey, if I want to see boobies on the internet, I can find them. I don't need to really see this. But kind of what the bigger story is here for me was that Beach Grit did the first article on it, and they took that exact approach. They were like, I think Chaz Smith might have wrote it, or maybe Derek Riley did, but they basically said, like, look, this happened. Don't go search it out.
Yeah.
We implore you to just kind of take the high road, respect Alana's privacy, and don't go search
it out.
That's
cool. Good for
Which
them.
Which was funny
that,
because
that is surprising for
it's
Beach.
Surprising for Beach Grit because they are the TMZ. But what was...
By the way, that's code for go search it out.
Well,
every 20-year-old male that checks Beach Grit every day is all about that.
And they probably are too, Beach Grit themselves. But what was weird to me was that Stab magazine posted an article a day or two later which mirrored their same sentiment. It was kind of
Beach Grit
like,
and Stab are sort of tied together at the hip, aren't they?
Derek Riley started Stab magazine with... I can't think of the
whoever,
name.
Whoever, yeah.
Yeah, it'll come to
me. So Derek's part of Stab. He's like the publisher, right?
But Derek left Stab.
Oh, was there a falling out?
I'm not sure what the story is. We need to kind of get to the bottom of that. But Derek left Stab and is now doing Beach Grit with Chaz Smith and
Solely
Morgan
doing
Mawson.
Beach Grit? That's how he makes his living?
I don't know if it's solely or what the deal is, but he left Stab.
All right.
So I don't know if he has any involvement with Stab, and maybe he fed the article to Stab, but Stab took the same approach. And then what was even more kind of depressing.
We should check the masthead on Stab and see if Derek's on the masthead. That'll tell us if there's been a falling out or not.
Yeah. What was more kind of bothersome to me was that The Inertia then wrote an article 5 days later taking the exact same approach. It was like they just ripped off Stab and Beach Grit and tried to take this pious approach.
That's the approach we're taking. That's the right approach.
But what
other option do you have? Either go search it out or don't.
I don't know.
And
just,
I think don't.
It was just weird that it looked to me like The Inertia was ripping off the pious kind of, like they read the Stab thing and go, hey, this is a good approach to take on this thing to come out clean, where we're breaking the story that there's nude photos, but we're also taking the pious approach of saying,
I don't know if
don't
pious is the right phrase for this. This is just the high road.
Yeah.
Right?
Well, let me look up the definition of pious.
Are you suggesting that they
like
plagiarized?
Is that
what you're suggesting? They plagiarized straight from Beach Grit and Stab?
Plagiarized is a...
Because most people are going to take the high road.
Plagiarized is a strong term that has legal connotation.
Right.
I wouldn't say they plagiarized. I would say that they really liked the way that Stab Stab's approach on this thing. And so they just thought, let's take the same approach.
Right. The same tone.
The same tone. And it just felt, just like, hey, dude, you're late to this party. Mm-hmm. And maybe, like you said, we're even later to the party by reporting it now, a month late, because this happened in kind of early September.
Oh, wow.
But
I had no idea.
Yeah. Something that I would like to point out from Webland, couple of little video stuff going on. Red Bull is producing a brand new series called Qualifying, and they're following five pro surfers in their effort to qualify for the World Tour. And they've got a range of young up-and-comers who have never been on the tour before, who are just starting their journey, all the way to Damien Hobgood, who spent 14 years on tour. So the guys that they're profiling are Evan Geiselman, Ezekiel Lau, Nathan Hedge, Pat Gadowskis, and Damien Hobgood. And it looks like it's made to the same quality that they've done their 21 Days series and some of their other video stuff. So I'm excited to see that. They have a preview video out for it now. The actual series will start being published at the end of October, which is any day now. So look forward to that.
Qualifying by Red Bull.
Qualifying by Red Bull. Another, cool. I've been also promoting Vice's sports series that they've been doing. They did that video with Greg Long, which I talked about, one with Kelly Slater. They have a series called Fightland, which profiles mixed martial artists of all different walks of life. They just did an episode with Dustin Barka, who's running for mayor in Kauai. And that's coming up, I think, next month. The
mayoral race?
The mayoral actual
November
vote.
The second Tuesday in November, right?
Yeah. And so they've got kind of a lead up video to that. But
Does he stand? Do you know where Dustin Bark? I'll try to Google it right now and see.
What do you mean, where does he stand?
Like, is he in the polling? Does he have a chance to win?
I don't know. Yeah, he does. He definitely has a chance to win. But this video also profiles him as an MMA fighter and professional surfer, and gives the backstory of how he got into his fight with Monsanto and the GMOs that test on Kauai, and that was his kind of platform to run on for the mayoral thing. He never intended to pursue politics, but it was more of a campaign against all the GMOs that are testing on their fertile grounds in Hawaii, in Kauai, where they have, like, you know, six seasons basically that they can harvest on, as opposed to one season on the mainland, which is why those companies test there. So definitely check out that video. I'll have it on surfsplendorpodcast.com. And then there was one other video that was worth watching. Oh, the Chanel commercial with Gisele Bündchen. Did you watch
yes,
that?
Oh, yes, the Chanel. I thought it was great.
Chanel.
She's gorgeous.
Chanel, the high fashion brand, is releasing, I don't know, a new perfume or something.
It was so corny, it was epic.
Was it?
Yeah.
Tell me your thoughts. Break down the video and give me your thoughts on it.
She's gorgeous. And she continues to be gorgeous. And she looks great in that little skimpy wetsuit. And she catches a massive wave at Chopu. They superimpose her body on this wave, sort of like they did when the Batman episode, when the Joker's surfing. And Batman surfing, you know, they just superimpose them with, you know, massive waves behind them.
Right.
And I just thought that she looked great. I mean,
are you going to buy a Chanel surfboard?
No, I'm not. I just... Like I said, it was so corny, and I think that they made it corny on purpose. Like, it was so corny, it was good.
So it's like the storyline is like she's got this mansion on the beach, and her boyfriend is watching her surf Chopu from the mansion on the beach, which physically isn't the way that that lineup exists, but nevertheless, she catches a wave, and he like leaves the house, and I think it's a perfume commercial, so like she smells his scent when she gets back home and she goes to chase him down or something. But not only are they selling perfume, but they're actually selling surfboards now too. They have a lineup, they have a quiver of surfboards available for sale. I think the cheapest one was like $1,700 or something. But we a couple listeners tweeted and emailed this to us, like, hey, kook or duke move right here. I think it's obviously a kooky move, but just funny. I mean, it's not even, I mean, there's not even an attempt taken seriously.
Yeah, exactly.
But I agree with you. Gisele is unbelievable. By the way, she's Brazilian. So I know you're anti-Brazo, but...
No. That's one of the reasons to root for the Brazilians is...
Got a few females that are worth looking at. And she's unbelievable. And Kelly Slater used to date Giselle, which is worth noting.
Yes.
She's now in the Tom Brady camp with a couple of kiddies, but that's all from Webland.
I'm trying to find where potential Dustin Barca's mayoral polling is, where he resides. I'm having an issue trying to find some polling results.
Figure it out in post, and then post all the stuff on the websites. But I'll definitely have that Viceland or the Fightland video from Vice on SurfSplendorPodcast.com and DownTheLineRadio.com.
I thought it'd be fun if we did a power rankings, and maybe we can ask the listeners to send in who they think their power rankings are. But the power rankings of the surf industry brands, like which brands are at the top and which brands are moving up or down in the polling, you know, and you know, as I sort of think about it, and I'd be interested to hear, of course, what you have to say about this, but the power rankings, for instance, I would say the number one brand in surfing right now is Hurley.
I would agree.
And then I would say that you could argue that next would be Rip Curl. And I'm just riffing right now based on Gabriel and all the press he's going to be getting.
Fanning.
Yeah, and Mick, right. So you've got Hurley, you've got Rip Curl. I would say Channel Islands might be number three.
Wow, really?
When I'm talking about surf brands, though. I'm not talking about, like, you know, youth lifestyle brands that call themselves surf, but I'm talking just about legit surf brands.
I think that's a good call, but I wasn't expecting that. I was expecting another clothing brand.
Well, that's what I mean. Like, clothing's not a surf brand in my eyes, you know? Like Hurley makes wetsuits and they make board shorts. And oh, by the way, Bob Hurley is the most hardcore surfer ever.
Yeah.
Like, you know, he shapes, when you're the guy that leads the company is a shaper.
Yeah.
You know, and started as a shaper. Well, guess what? That's a surf company, even if they sell, like, you know, swim fins or whatever. Yeah. So, you know, a lot of this is based on what I think is a surf company, what you think is a surf company.
Okay.
So
those
might be the top three, you know, and if we could break down maybe the top 10 surf companies in a power rankings and why they're making their moves up and down based on certain things that are happening.
Yeah, let's do that. Let's get listener feedback. Email us through our websites or social media us and let us know what your thoughts are, and let's come up with some informed opinions.
Yeah, give us your top five, maybe. Top five.
We'll come back next show.
I mean, surf brands.
What you got to factor into that is, like you say, Rip Curl. I agree with you, but Rip Curl's presence in California isn't really too significant. I would say we got to factor in worldwide presence, what their
own marketing stuff is like.
Yeah.
Like, there's companies like Ruka who, you know, yeah, Ruka has some surf in their DNA, but they're also like mixed martial arts. They're
right.
Like, to me, that's not a hardcore surf brand. That's a brand that's a youth lifestyle brand, as I mentioned before.
But they still qualify as a surf brand.
Well,
but the power rankings.
I'm saying no, they don't. Like, I'm saying, really, why? Because give me a reason. Why? Because they put, like, surf pictures on their website?
Well, no, because they sponsor and support pro surfers.
Well, who do they sponsor and support?
Nobody on the CT.
Alex Nost is probably the number one guy.
Yeah,
Alex.
Yeah, Ford Archibald.
Oh, Makua.
Well, I don't even
probably
want to say
Makua.
Ford Archibald, but Matt Archibald.
So there's some guys.
Dino Adrian.
But I would say that if you went to them and go, hey, are you a surf company? They'd say, no, we're a youth lifestyle company.
Sure.
In my eyes, then, if you're not going to claim 100% surf, or like that you're 100% of your DNA is surf, then you're not really a surf company. You're a company that likes surfing and is a part of surfing, but that's not who your company is. You're also into mixed martial arts. You're also into, like, art, you know, whatever.
It was founded in surfing. Conan Hayes was one of the founders of Ruka.
Maybe, but my point is that they're sort of like they have a broader reach. I think they're more encompassing.
Well, I would say whoever's making the argument, all they got to do is convince us. The listener
is
making the argument.
Maybe Ruka's on the list, but they're certainly, in my eyes, that's not, they could never be at the top because they're never 100% all in on surf. You know, like, they don't build wetsuits. They don't make surfboards. They're just capitalizing on the imagery.
Right. I agree with you. We'll come back with our power rankings in 2 weeks from now.
Exactly.
Do you have must-see moment, Dukes and Kooks and all that jazz, or should I break it down?
Well, I think the must-see moment's already been seen by everybody.
I agree.
540.
That's my must-see moment
for
sure.
That's the must-see moment.
And specifically, I will say and post the tour notes video that Peter King does.
Yeah,
I'm a big fan. I thought that was the best breakdown of the 540. Because PK not only gets an angle on it filming, but then he shows Kelly the video once Kelly gets to the beach and gets an interview of Kelly watching the video, and then gets an interview with Brett Simpson and Kaloe, who are out in the water with them watching the video, all within, you know, 20 minutes after the air happens. And Peter King, I've actually spent some time with him on the beach before, and he has this Panasonic camera that has Wi-Fi in it. So when he films something, he beams it over to his phone and he can upload it instantly.
Oh, killer.
So within minutes after filming a clip, he's got it posted on Instagram.
That is awesome.
And so, yeah, pretty cool. Peter's a cool dude. And so anyways, he does this tour notes video. It's a minute and a half long, showing Kelly's 540 plus all those interviews. It's a great way to kind of get it in a bite-sized form. So that's the must-see moment for the week. My Duke for the week is my hometown hero, Brett Simpson, for taking out Gabriel Medina in round three and forcing the world title race to Pipeline.
Well, that's a great pick. It seems like that's sort of Brett's calling, huh? He's the perfect guy to be the upsetter here.
Yeah. And Brett's had a tough year and continued that poor form after he beat Gabriel Medina by losing in round four. I don't think he got 10 point total. And then losing in round five against Adam Melling with like literally needing a three something. And Melling had super low scores. And that was a heat where the waves did not show up. But man, it's painful to lose needing a three.
Yeah, it is tough. It's a tough one to swallow.
But nevertheless, he's my Duke. And my kook of the week, CJ Hobgood, for his faceplant into a rock.
Wow.
Did you see this?
I did actually see that. Yeah.
Wow.
Where was that? In Florida somewhere?
No, it was Portugal? In Portugal during this event.
Because he got injured, but he injured his foot.
That was separate. So in one of the free surf days.
That looks silly.
CJ Hobgood is in the water free surfing down the road from the contest zone with a number of pros, but one of which was Felipe Toledo. And Felipe and him are riffing out in the water, and Felipe's like, dude, you got to do an aerial on this next wave. So CJ gets a left, does this little straight air, stomps it in front of this rocky outcropping that's actually like above water.
Yeah, like 5 feet above water.
Somehow man. CJ doesn't look at the rocks. CJ lands the air, and instead of looking in front of him, looks back to Felipe and starts claiming it. Like, hey, did you see my air? Did you see my air? And then the moment that he turns back to the beach, the rock is right in front of him. Like you said, 3 or 5 feet out of the water, CJ goes head first into the rocks.
Gnarly.
Like, so gnarly. Gnarliest wipeout ever. Face plants into the dry rock. And then somehow doesn't get injured, but comes into the beach. We've got a video of it. Again, we'll post it. And is talking to the cameraman. He's like, what the heck? Did you see that? I can't believe I didn't get injured. I guess his shoulder hit first, but it's the craziest wipeout ever. That's my kook of the week because, number one, why are you claiming a freaking lame air? I know it was kind of ironically and so that Felipe would see you, but CJ, kook move, dude. Look for the rocks before you look for the claim. And then, like you said, right before his heat in round three, he was free surfing down the beach and suffered a horrible gash on the bottom of his left foot. They showed a picture of it. He posted it on Instagram. It's just this wide open. I mean, you can see hollowness in his foot. The thing is so, so deep, and forced him to not surf his round three heat, which Adam Melling got a bye through and then ended up losing in the quarterfinals. So
heavy stuff, man.
Yes, indeedy.
Well, I guess that's kind of all we got.
Yeah, we do. It's a good show, though, dude.
Yeah, let me get some out music going here for us. And I guess we're going to do this in 2 weeks, right?
Yes, sir.
And you'll be able to hear this probably later today, right? You're going to send me the file?
Yes, sir.
I like it. All right, well, look, until next time, for David Scales, I'm Scott Bass. Do you want to give an email address?
Hello@surfsplendorpodcast.com. And then, of course, on social media @surfsplendor.
And you can email me at surftalksandiego@gmail.com. surftalksandiego@gmail.com. And so until next time, adios and aloha.
All right, I've got a little bit of unofficial math for you in regards to the world title race going into Pipeline. For Kelly to win the world title, he must win Pipe. while having Mick place third or worse and Gabriel place 13th or 25th. So Kelly is now kind of the long shot to win Pipe, and Mick Fanning has, of course, bettered his situation. However, if Gabriel places 13th or 25th at Pipe, Mick must place third to beat Gabriel or fifth to tie. And if they do tie, they will actually have a surf off, according to the ASP rulebook. If Gabriel places ninth at Pipe, Mick must play second at Pipe to claim the world title, and Kelly has no chance at that point. And if Gabriel places third or fifth, Mick must win the event. And if Gabriel makes the final at Pipe, he wins the world title, period. Even if he gets second and Mick wins the event, if they're in the final together, Gabriel still would win the event. So it's basically coming down to Mick and Gabriel just vying for better position throughout Pipeline. And if Gabe goes down early, Kelly still has a chance to win the event, or win the title by winning the event, in short. So those are the unofficial scenarios. Unofficial because oftentimes people present better math down the line and prove us wrong. So until then, those are the stats. And I hope you enjoyed today's episode. Thank you, Scott Bass, for helping co-host. And again, if you enjoy this show and you want to invest in the future of the show, simply share it with a friend. That is what you can do to help this show grow. You're our only form of advertising. And so, you know, just you spreading it through word of mouth is the way that this show grows. Follow us on social media, and that's kind of an easy way to share the show. We're at Surf Splendor on Twitter and Instagram, and then, of course, facebook.com/Surf Splendor. Also, go through the archives, listen to past episodes. Everything is free on our website, in iTunes, Stitcher, or wherever you download podcasts. And then also on our website, we have an archive of music. So feel free to check that out. There's playlists for every episode of Surf Splendor from the beginning. So enjoy. As I said at the beginning of this show, we will be back at the beginning of next week with an all-new episode of Surf Splendor featuring a conversation with Timmy Curran, which I think is really cool. Loved Timmy surfing growing up. So look forward to that. All right, we will see you next week. And until then, this is your host of Surf Splendor, David Scales, signing off saying, until next time.